Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Action.
What?
Action. Wow. Oh.
Tomorrow we have the very first scenes in the show.
Even 23 years in.
I'm excited. Terrified and excited.
Panic!
Hello everybody and welcome back to the worst idea of all time. Little bit of context. It's Tim Batt here. I'm sitting with Guy Montgomery in my baby's bedroom. Nursery, some would call it.
Yeah, he's a nursery man now, this guy, Tim Batt.
Eight years ago, Guy and I set out to watch Grown Ups 2 once a week, every week for a year, and we did that. Since then, we've watched Sex and the City, the movie, and Sex and the City 2, the movie, 52 times apiece, and reviewed it.
Some of us a little more.
Yes. Later, in 2022, Mattress Park Lit King teamed back up with Sarah Jessica Parker, Kristen Davis, and Cynthia Nixon, but notably not Kim Cattrall, to produce a series called And Just Like That, which is part of the Sex and the City cinematic universe, which we all know does not include the non-canonical television series from the 90s and noughties. Guy Montgomery and I have today now also watched the making of documentary. Guy is shaking his head in disbelief at me relaying the path that has led us here to this moment.
When it's just one of those things when it's all laid out in front of you, you can really feel the weight of it. It's incredible in life how one tiny decision can just unravel so much. And what are we doing here? And yes, that is actually something I felt for the entirety of this making of documentary was what it really hammered home for me is just how much this show is not for us. And, you know, at the risk of upsetting the people who the documentary was for,
yeah,
I don't know that documentary was for anyone. To me, it was mostly like a reminder about how many people are required to make a high-budget TV show or movie.
Yeah. It's interesting because in a lot of ways there was something for no one, but in some ways there was something for everyone.
Mm.
Because there was the first, I would say third, of this hour-long making of documentary, I couldn't really follow what they were doing or saying. They kept cutting to like a scatty jazz beat, and then they would have some, you know, slightly hard to discern dialogue happening between the cast and crew. I couldn't really follow the sequence of events very well.
It felt like a strung together series of like rejected Instagram stories ideas.
Yeah, it was a series of TikToks from the crew in the first third.
But I mean, also, you know, a making of documentary, like how many points of interest and barriers we've cleared to make it to this documentary, like how deep we as consumers, or, you know, your more traditional fans who are doing it for the love of it, which I enjoyed the series. I don't know if that's
just
what
like
I,
that.
I don't know if that's what I said at the time, but I enjoyed.
You got there.
I enjoyed watching it, but it, like, this is just, it felt kind of, I guess it communicated, it had the same unclear audience as the show itself, which is like a lot of it was pandering to historical fans of the non-canonical parts of the Sex and the City universe. We're traipsing through wardrobes with the original wardrobe designer. We're looking at all of Carrie's old iconic looks. She's pulling them out, holding them up, And then after surveying so many different looks, she says, and we're going to put all of these in her wardrobe as treats for the fans.
Yeah.
You know, we see they...
The middle third was them going through what all the crew members do on a TV movie set, it's which was nice. It was like, I'm the key gaffer and I deal with the lights.
It was like an Adam McKay insert in one of his movies or TV shows, which is like, a gaffer is pretty much a person who is responsible for camera movement. Or lights, rather.
But that's what I mean. Well, both, as we found out in this documentary. Yeah,
and we're learning.
We're learning, and that's what I mean by there was something for everyone, because if you were a fan of sort of like jazz-influenced, almost like poetically put together sound and images, that's your first third of this documentary.
That's right, yeah.
Doesn't have to make sense. It's about vibe. It's about tone. There was tone. We got that. If you're interested in how the movies get made and the television shows, that's in here too. And if you're a fan of fashion, well, boy howdy, check out a 10-minute conversation about a hat. Not hats, one hat. A single hat that causes a rift.
Incredibly, that was the most interesting part of the entire documentary. They save it for the very end. It's about the last 10 minutes. And it is because it feels focused, I can actually, as a consumer, as a watcher, identify the central point of contention, the purpose for all of this footage being there, which is Sarah Jessica Parker falls in love.
It's about a woman who loves a hat.
With a hat. And it's an absolute dog shit hat. It's like
the hat sucks. We've got to lead with that. Yeah. Think of like a Panama hat, but they've tried to make it sort of fashion forward.
2D. She's in a room doing a wardrobe check and there's like this really, really squashed hat on a table, and she walks over to it and she goes, "This hat," and everyone's like, "Oh yeah, we're thinking about throwing out that hat," and she's like, "No, no, no," and she puts on the hat, and then she sort of sculpts Carrie's whole outfit and this whole personality around it, and she's wearing it on set. She's got this bald hair technician helping her out, and Tim was like, "Love to see a bald hair technician."
We stan a bald hairstylist. This is Sarah Jessica Parker's hairstylist for the series.
I mean,
hair is so important in the show because it's all about like fashion and looks and aesthetics of everything.
See, the thing to me is,
motherfucker's bald. He doesn't have any hair.
No, you put a bald man in charge of hats. Never put a bald man in charge of hair. To his credit, he does do a bang up job. But so he's fitting the hat for the actual on the day. So she's now wearing the costume. She's got the full look together. She's on set. She's like, they're about to shoot the scene. And then Mattress Pikeler comes up to her and he says, "The first thing you got to know is that hat looks fantastic. And the second thing you got to do is take off that fucking hat because it's driving me crazy."
It's so funny. I didn't even fully, I couldn't quite grasp exactly what was going, because it was like, I'm going to have to tell Jessica. He calls her Jessica. Mm. He's always done that. I've noticed that in previous things. He calls her Jessica, and he's like, "I'm going to have to tell Jessica this hat's got to go." I'm basically representing the network at this point. I'm like, what is going on here? He's like, "She can have the hat in one scene, but then I've got to take her off. I've got to take it off her because it's not going to work in multiple scenes." I'm like, why would anyone think that's a good idea? This hat's fucking atrocious. Just tell her she's got to ditch the hat. And then he's totally right, because he goes up to her and tentatively tries to let SJP know that this hat's not going to fly. She's fucking devastated. Yeah. We get a Big Brother style piece to camera about the disappointment that SJP is feeling, the emotional tumult of losing the hat.
There's a poem written by an anonymous scribe on set, which is sort of, it's meant to be tongue in cheek, but
very menacing.
It's about burying Mattress Pikeler King as a dead body with the hat.
With the hat under Carrie Bradshaw's wardrobe. I don't know if I talked through a bit or what. It was either written by Molly, who's the universally beloved designer, do you call it?
Yeah, costume.
She picks the clothes for the ladies.
It's an important job. Or by SJP herself.
I want to think it's the latter, but probably the former.
For those sort of 10, 15 minutes, there's a beautifully focused short story about tensions between creative collaborators and, you know, responsibilities on set, and about I guess, conflict and conflict resolution. And
well, or is it just about a fucking weird hat,
well,
man?
Well, it's all relative, isn't it? Because if you've sat through this sort of, this jazzy, scatty sort of mishmash.
Yeah. Hey, it's great to be back with Carrie Bradshaw. We're in a subway, New York.
Yeah.
But it's not the subway station you think. We put stickers over all the signs.
Yeah. Shh, don't tell anyone. But if you navigate your way through all of that sort of randomly selected footage, all of a sudden it feels like, wow, we've got a beautiful little moment here with this.
I honestly think that Guy and I are both so tired at this point that we gave this thing a pretty fair shake because we were just like, fuck it, it's nice to sit for an hour. Nothing was verbalized through the thing, but I felt a great sense of, the baby fell asleep and I was like, boy howdy, I think Guy and I are really soaking up a 60-minute sit on a couch.
Yeah, yeah. And it just so happened to be the thing that was on in front
Anything
of us.
Anything could have been on at that stage.
Yeah.
I think we would have accepted it into our hearts.
And I wasn't ungrateful for being able to sit for a long amount of time, but it felt long. It was a long 60 minutes.
Mm. I agree.
There were moments.
It just
like,
felt, it kind of found its way as it got into it. And it was like, cool, maybe just fucking ditch the first 40 minutes of this.
Well,
start at the hat and end on them in Paris. Paris apparently was a big deal.
Yeah,
no one's been to fucking Paris before. Yeah, everyone thinks that Paris
is France.
A hypothetical mystery
there were
place
some,
that
some
exists only in the mind and the soul.
Nice reminders.
You can fly to Paris.
Anyone can.
You just buy a ticket and you go there.
Yeah, that's true.
They're rich. Yeah, I'm not talking the characters. All the people who make this shit. You can just buy a plane ticket and travel to Paris.
You don't have to go for work. You could go in your leisure time. Wait. And you'd probably have a lot more time to do touristy stuff. You could visit the Louvre.
Champs-Élysées.
Am I saying that correctly? Arc de Triomphe. The Pompidou. The Stade de France. The one of their famous rivers. The number of things you could do is limitless. But watching it made me think of a few moments and performances that maybe I didn't give credit or didn't, you know, you don't think about the context of the actors stepping into the roles and stepping into this world and this universe, which is so beloved, and how intimidating that might have been for these new women who were cast as essentially multiple Samantha replacements.
God, it was funny. So they talked about this, and first they were like, we didn't want Naya to replace Samantha. And I was like, oh, yeah. I never got to the bottom of which one was supposed to be the Samantha replacement, because there was so much written and said before the series came out and we watched it about, like, oh, they've cast all these new ladies to replace Samantha. I was like, which one of these actors is supposed to be the Kim Cattrall replacement? And it was a bit of an amalgamated effort, I thought.
I'm happy to circle back, though. I think in my opinion, it was Seema.
Yes, with... Because that's not what they said. They said it was Naya.
No,
who
no,
was
they,
the law they, professor for Miranda.
Well, everyone had a little turn doing it. But to
that's
me,
what I'm
that
saying.
Was the closest
but
friend
in the
of,
doco, they sort of identified.
Yeah, but they don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
They don't
about
know what they're talking about, man. They were talking about the TV series as if that fucking matters.
Yeah. And it really gave me respect for, I've just got to find the actor's name. I mean, first of all of those actors, but specifically for the woman who plays Lisa Todd Wexley, Ari Parker, who they even splashed across a screen cap of a news article which was saying she's receiving backlash for replacing Samantha. And that, you know, gave me the...
There's a whole other person. Now we're up to the third Samantha replacement.
Why? You know, she leaves a massive Samantha-shaped hole. But I thought that this woman, Nicole Ari Parker, was absolutely fantastic as Lisa Todd Wexley.
Oh, yeah, she was a great character. And she was the one whose husband was the musical theatre actor in Hamilton, which I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah, and watching her, like, I have difficulty divorcing some of the actors from their characters because the only time I've actually spent with them has been in character. SJP gets a lot of screen time, and so you can draw a pretty clear line between her and Carrie. Although there is overlap, like she does go full immersion. She becomes the set dresser, Like, she gets really deep into costume. She's very tactile, they say. She's very particular about what's on set. She wants it to feel like she's been living in the room.
I sort of appreciated that. They did get into SJP's, like, method quite a bit. And you see, because her comment on it is basically, like, it is very close to method acting, what she's doing. She's like, I sort of have to be across everything in Carrie's world for it to feel real to me and be able to interact. And the short version of that is Sarah Jessica Parker, she loves doing shit.
Yeah.
The camera's on, she's got to be holding a coffee mug, opening a bag, putting a fucking dumb hat on.
We saw
she's a very hands. She's like, what do I do with my hands? I've got to be doing something.
Honestly, I haven't done a lot of acting, but the times I have, if you don't have something to do with your hands, those things will lead you down the garden path. They're a very challenging thing to, like, you know, in life, everyone's pretty natural with their hands. You know what you're doing.
Yeah.
On camera, your hands suddenly become these very unnatural extensions of, like, you know.
How do I walk? How do I breathe?
Yeah. But we saw some scenes where it was the scene where she finds out that Biggs left $1 million to his ex-wife in her will. And we got to see a lot of different takes, a lot of different performances of her freaking out about that on the phone, and to Cynthia Nixon's Miranda, who was in the kitchen. And it was nice to see her make some different offers. It was nice to just actually, you know, for them to give us, it was not a lot, but just a glimpse of the functional behind the scenes part of it. Like,
the actual shooting bits. It was, fuck, there's a lot of people involved, eh?
Yeah.
A lot of people, a lot of money, a lot of big things, a lot of big lights.
And a lot of masks. Big cameras.
Yeah.
Everyone's in protective gear.
God, it must have been a pain in the ass, eh?
Yeah. Unless you're acting and unless you're seen as live, you're wearing a mask.
Yeah, they were even blocking scenes. This is a little fucking industry term for you.
Yeah, you're a smart listeners. Guy.
They were blocking and they'd have to have the masks on.
Another thing I enjoyed, they highlighted Cynthia Nixon's directorial debut on the show, and we got to see her directing process. And we also got to hear from Kristen Davis and Sarah Jessica Parker and how it felt to be directed by Cynthia Nixon while they were acting against her in scenes.
Yes, one person I would have loved to have heard from in this documentary, Kim Cattrall.
Yeah.
Sex and the City's Samantha Jones.
She was notable in her absence. They all gave themselves a pretty hearty pat on the back for how they handled
really
her absence. It was very tasteful, very classy. It reflected like real friendships.
If one of us, if we, Guy and Tim have a falling out and one of us just starts doing the podcast with some other person, and so Guy ditches Tim, Guy continues to do Worst Idea, Guy has started doing it with Reese Matthewson, which actually I think would be a fantastic
show. People would love it.
It'd be really, really good, really strong duo. And there are mentions of the old co-host Tim, and I'm ropeable. I've been like cut out. I'm ropeable. But I don't have a microphone
anymore.
You don't
have right of reply.
I have nothing. I've been deplatformed.
And we say, I tell you, I think we really handled the Tim thing really well.
Yeah, I want to talk extensively about how well we handled that.
It's pretty easy to pat yourself on the back about how you handled something when the person who you're talking about has tape over their mouth.
Truly, if they're not there, just don't bring it up. Stop talking about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's not hard.
It did give me a glimpse, a moment of understanding for the fact that it had to be addressed somehow, but you could have done it once at the top and left it alone.
This is what you say. We asked if Kim Cattrall wanted to be in the show. She didn't.
Think about it now. They did the full season. Kim Cattrall, head held high, morals intact, has her reasons, says no.
Yeah.
We know, and just like that, has been commissioned for a second run.
Yes.
They have kept Samantha Jones' character alive throughout the entire series.
Yeah. Not only that, but like the final frame from memory is kind of a conversation to her.
They extend the olive branch to say, it's still here.
What do you think, brother? Do you think they're going to get her in?
I think she'll say no. I don't know anything about her financial situation.
It would be crazy to come in season two after everything that's happened.
Would you like that?
I would love it. Because we're going to have to watch this goddamn thing. I would love to see Samantha Jones in the mix. It would be crazy. From a meta, you know, franchise point of view, it's like the Avengers, except it would be like if you started with the Avengers, then they all broke up, and then we found out that I don't know, Mark Ruffalo hated doing Marvel movies, but then he came back later.
Yeah.
This is a bit, the wheels really fell off that metaphor.
Things change. Time changes everything. They say time heals all wounds. And they also say stuff like money talks. I mean, I've heard people saying something as, you know, as far-fetched as it takes a village.
To raise a child.
Yeah.
That's something I've been getting off the ground. I said that.
Was that one of yours?
That's me. That's a Tim Batt thing.
Man. I never had you pegged as a guy who could coin an idiom. So, I mean, I don't know. I'd be really interested to find out. What were some of the other little nuggets they buried inside of this?
Well, do you want to talk about Paris a little bit? I mean, we sort of mentioned it, but like, man, they've got a boner for Paris in this thing. Everyone's talking about Paris with such reverency. I've never been, but I know a lot of people who have. And the consistent feedback I get about Paris, France, is that it smells bad.
I've been to Paris.
How did it smell?
I don't remember the smell. Well, so I guess neutral.
I don't think you've been.
Well, no, I have.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Everyone else tells me it stinks.
They didn't mention it stinks on the show.
Maybe they haven't been either.
Well, maybe they're just hanging out in the right neighbourhoods. Carrie loves Paris, and so everyone loves Paris. And, like, these people have been with this show, not just the actors, but the people behind the scenes, the costume people, the, you know, the DOP, the gaffer, all of these people have been with the show. The script consultant, who we find out turned down a job on a Spielberg film to do the and just like that reboot, which seems crazy to me.
Yeah.
But obviously it might be a fun working environment so long as you're not Kim Cattrall. All these people have spent so long with this show and these characters. You can see that there is a genuine love and reverence for the thing they're working on. And I would love to see a behind-the-scenes documentary on the making of Sex and the City 2 to understand where the fuck they were at that point, because I reckon it would be a very different movie.
Here's what I think happened. I think so Sex and the City 2 came out in
2008? Or was it 10?
10, I want to say. I think it was 10. So we, from memory, we're a little ways into the Blu-ray versus HD DVD war. So I think DVDs are still very much a thing. Blu-rays are coming in thick and fast, I think, because the PlayStation 4 is out. So what I'm saying is we've still got physical media. And back when we had physical media, there was a lot more behind the scenes documentaries, making ofs and films.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they made one for Sex and the City 2. I think they threw it in the bin when they accidentally recorded the animosity between these players.
I'm looking up the special features right now, and you can buy it on Amazon, two-disc special edition.
Yep.
You want to know what it comes with?
Yes, yes.
Give me that product.
Very much so.
What? Give me the product information. Tell me a little bit about what I'm paying for when I get that second disc.
I'm not shocked it doesn't go through the features.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not shocked by that. I'm not shocked by that at all. But my money would be, until Guy can prove me right or wrong, I reckon that they filmed it and they threw it in the bin because it was too spicy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You might be right. I'm devastated about that. I would love to know what sort of stuff you can get.
I think the same about The Hobbit, although I know there are a lot of makings of The Hobbit, but I'm fascinated by the making of The Hobbit.
Really?
Yeah. Shit went on, man. Shit went on during the making of that. Can we speak about this just briefly?
Yeah.
A little detour?
I don't mind.
Dude, The Hobbit, man, it's crazy.
What do you know about it?
So you can hear, I've got a baby here, if that wasn't apparent.
I can't just hear it, Tim. I can see it. I'm looking at this guy.
Yeah, you know. He's blowing raspberries. He doesn't like Peter Jackson. So we had, I hope I'm saying his name right, Guillermo del Toro, who got to a really advanced stage of mapping this movie out with like previs on the special effects.
He's a massive Del Toro fan. It still stinks.
And he got to a really advanced stage. And the version I've heard is that the studio at that point were like, yo, guess what? This ain't one film. This is three. And he said, bruh, this is one movie. And they said, get the fuck, you fucking out of here.
You're not going to like who we've been talking to.
So then they get Peter Jackson in, who's like, three films. Okay, I guess. But he comes in so late that he's got no time to map anything out. All of the behind the scenes stuff that I've seen is Peter Jackson, like, gaunt thin, and racing around trying to get in his head just some idea of how to make a scene work on the fly with these like visual effects technicians who are tearing their hair out. They're trying to build the aeroplane as it's taking off.
Yeah.
And I want to see that story. I've heard spurious things about what Peter Jackson needed to do to get through the making of the three films, which I think a lot of New Zealanders, you know, in the biz of probably bullshit. But, you know, the dude was pulling off the impossible and did, but like, at what fucking cost?
Wow, I mean, I tell you this, I didn't watch them.
Me neither, bro.
I'm amazed they made them anyway, because I told him, I said, I'm not going to watch them, Pete.
And then he did that fucking crazy thing where he released them in like 48 frames per second 3D, and everyone who went and saw that version was like, I feel ill. And this looks like it was recorded on a VHS at a wedding in the 80s. Why have you done this, Peter Jackson? Can you imagine getting to the end of that and that is the like universal response from a project that has almost killed you, which you did out of like, I mean, it seems like Peter Jackson did it out of a sense of obligation to the franchise.
Do you know what? You would probably do as a balm if that was what happened. You worked that hard on a project and that was the feedback you got. I reckon you'd probably take about 60 hours worth of footage of the Beatles rehearsing songs they don't know yet and just lock yourself in a vault somewhere. Be like, I'm doing this. I'm going to get it down to 8 hours. So I don't want to take any questions about it.
He smashed it. He also successfully bought a mirror and installed them in Wellington.
Yeah.
And everyone fucking hates the guy. Anyway.
It's all by the by, guys.
I guess. We get to see a lot of Mattress Pikelet King in this documentary.
He only really gave one solid talking head interview, but the camera follows him a lot behind the scenes. Obviously, he's a very senior figure. He's making a lot of decisions. At one point, he learns about periods. And
very funny.
He doesn't really take the information on board with much grace. It's he appears funny. To be sort of confronted.
He's like, because they're talking about the scene in Just Like That, where Charlotte thinks that she's going through menopause or has, and then gets a flash period. And they've got this rule, we find out in the documentary, that one of the writers has to have gone through the storyline that they're writing. And so they're sort of explaining to Mattress Pikelet King in the writers' room about how all that goes. And he's got his head in his hands.
So this,
like, okay, so like, how does this work? Why haven't you?
Yeah, he how do you think he comes across in this?
Fine. I don't know.
Does he seem switched on to you? Like, you got to be switched on if you're across a massive project like this.
I know.
To work your way up that high, to maintain, and also to corral everyone to do it again.
Yes and no. I don't know, man. Like, the American television and film industry is so mature and switched on and unionized. that I feel like you can be way more of a Muppet and get away with it because everyone really fucking knows their job. In New Zealand, you kind of need to know a little bit about every department in case you've accidentally hired a person who just doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You've hired a sound recordist who just like has never done it before and bluffed their way onto the set.
Yeah.
Tricked their way on. You kind of have to know a few clues to call them out. But in America, they've got like guilds and unions and everything's, you know, like certified and got a stamp of approval that's really hard to get. So as a director, you can kind of come in and be like, everyone knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
I can throw my 2 cents in.
At one point, Cynthia Nixon, when she's learning to direct or like, you know, discussing the experience of having to direct this episode, says to Mattress Pikelet, so what are you thinking? Like, is the tone of this episode the same or is it different from the rest of the series? And he goes, Cynthia, you've been with the show for 20 years. I think you know the tone. And I'm like, it's not, you know, like, you're not really not answering a question here, buddy. Yeah, yeah. Like, she just wants a little guidance. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, you get it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all said and done.
Great to sit for 60 minutes on a couch.
Yeah.
I'll say that for it. 5-star sit.
Would you recommend this to anyone?
No. Not a single person. Not a fan of Sex and the City. Not a person who stayed with us and watched along.
Someone
and just
who's
like that.
Interested in
the biz?
Yeah.
There's better shit than this.
Okay.
If you were into like fashion, maybe that, like if you're into costume design. Well, and really, like, let's be can we be real for a second?
You can be real.
That's who Sex and the City and Just Like That is for. It's for particularly women who really have a boner for labels.
And
we really swim in that for
bold,
a lot of the doco.
Bold fashion. And they talk about that in the show. At one point, we see, you know, in this seemingly endless montage of the costume designers going through vintage clothes with various different vintage warehouse owners, we see them pull out this sort of, I can't remember who made this suit, some suit from 96, and like, this is gorgeous, it's got the open back, it's kind of sexy.
Yeah.
And I take it to Carrie, and it's a Sarah Jessica Parker, and she's like, that's ugly, I don't know, like that. She's wearing it, she's like, this is ugly. And they're like, well, it's about pushing boundaries and getting out of your comfort zone, which is kind of what the show's about.
Which is cool, because they did a montage at that point of all the stuff that she wore through the TV show, and you're like, yeah, this shit's wild. And it always was. And that's the thing with fashion, man, it's like the gap between something absolutely hideous and fashion forward is wafer thin, and that difference is confidence. It's just being able to boldly keep your chin up and wear the shit out of those fucking weird clothes and that stupid hat.
Yeah. She's got a thing for hats. I shouldn't talk about it, but I did watch Sex and the City 2 a couple of times recently, and the hat she wears onto the plane when she's flying to the United Arab Emirates, and it's like the widest, confrontational, like space sucking hat I've seen.
Yeah.
And because of the uniforms of the stewards who are also wearing hats,
yeah,
she suddenly is like, whoa, and I thought my hat was too much.
And it
She's got, and she wears that, and that's also Sex and the City, she wears that sort of Hades Queen of the Underworld hat to Stanford Anthony's wedding.
Exactly.
She's got a bad eye for hats. And the difficult thing to discern between Sarah Jessica Parker and Carrie Bradshaw is how aligned their fashion sense is, because she makes a lot of decisions for Carrie, and obviously she embodies the character, she knows it as well as anyone, but it is difficult to tell whether or not she signs off on all of the outfits that she wears. She's got very clear ideas, like it is a fun opportunity for her to play dress up, maybe put on bolder outfits than she would in her real life.
Yeah,
I reckon Sarah Jessica Parker, in terms of taste for hats, has some of the worst sense I've ever seen. And it's difficult because the hair technician, who would probably like to double as the hat guy, bald people know a lot about hats.
Yeah.
He's working alongside her, being like, I'm working so hard on this hair and you're covering it with the worst fucking hats I've seen in my life.
Really humanizes Mattress Pikelet King during that 10-minute sequence where he's like, I'm going to have a conversation and I know how it's going to go.
I would listen to a podcast where Sarah Jessica Parker talks about hats.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. That should exist. Get on it, iHeartRadio. But doesn't Mattress Pikelet King have a podcast? Someone was telling me this recently.
There was a watch-along podcast for And Just Like That.
Oh,
and it was done by us, the boys.
All right. Well, listen, I'm not going to spend more than a 1-to-2 ratio discussing what we just watched. We've been talking for half an hour. It seems good. Don't watch this thing. It was a weird thing to watch, but it was a great set.
You don't need to watch it. What you do need to know is we've seen the announcement. We're excited by it. Or I am. I'm looking forward to going back. I forgot about this.
This is so good.
Shay Diaz comedy concert t-shirts, like a merch run for a comedian, for the comedian Shay Diaz. I bought them online.
Whom you hate.
And they arrived yesterday.
Yeah.
And Tim and I incidentally were meeting up to catch up and carve out some time so we could both socialize and work. And I brought the t-shirts. And now Tim and I have matching Shay Diaz comedy concert t-shirts.
I will say this though, you got me a large, which was ambitious of you.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't know what the sizing was going to be.
It's good. I'll wear it. I'll put it in the dryer.
Yeah. I think the material feels like it will shrink if you want it to.
Great shirt. It's a great shirt.
I'm planning on wearing it. I'm doing a taped stand-up performance in Australia next week. By the way, if you're in Melbourne and you're listening to this and you haven't bought a ticket to my show yet, please do. It's called Guy McGregor by Name, Guy McGregor by Nature.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.